Book 9, New Coasts and Poseidon's Son. In Book 6 through 8, Odysseus is welcomed by King Asinous, who gives a banquet in his honor. That night, the king begs Odysseus to tell who he is and what has happened to him. In Books 9 through 12, Odysseus relates to the king his adventures. I am Laertes' son. What shall I say first? What shall I keep until the end? The gods have tried me in a thousand ways. But first my name. Let that be known to you, and if I pull away from pitiless death, friendship will bind us, though my land lies far. I am Laertes' son, Odysseus. Men hold me formidable for guile in peace and war. This fame has gone abroad to the sky's rim. My home is on the peaked sea mark of Ithaca, under Mount Neon's wind-blown robe of leaves, in sight of other islands, Dulichium, Same, wooded Zacynthus, Ithaca being most lofty in that coastal sea, and northwest, while the rest lie east and south. A rocky isle, but good for a boy's training. I shall not see on earth a place more dear, though I have been detained long by Calypso, loveliest among goddesses, who held me in her smooth caves to be her heart's delight, as Circe of Aeaea, the enchantress, desired me and detained me in her hall. But in my heart I never gave consent. Where shall a man find sweetness to surpass his own home and his parents? In far lands he shall not, though he find a house of gold. What of my sailing, then, from Troy? What of those years of rough adventure weathered under Zeus? Odysseus explains that soon after leaving Troy, he and his crew landed near Ismarus, the city of the Sicones. The Sicones are allies of the Trojans and therefore enemies of Odysseus. Odysseus and his crew raided the Sicones, robbing and killing people, until the Siconian army killed 72 of Odysseus's men and drives the rest out to sea. Delayed by a storm for 2 days, Odysseus and his remaining companions then continued their journey. The Lotus Eaters. I might have made it safely home that time, but as I came round Mylia, the current took me out to sea, and from the north a fresh gale drove me on, past Cythera. 9 days I drifted on the teeming sea before dangerous high winds. Upon the 10th we came to the coastline of the Lotus Eaters, who live upon that flower. We landed there to take on water. All ships' companies mustered alongside for the midday meal. Then I sent out 2 picked men and a runner to learn what race of men that land sustained. They fell in soon enough with Lotus Eaters, who showed no will to do us harm, only offering the sweet lotus to our friends. But those who ate this honeyed plant, the lotus, never cared to report nor to return. They longed to stay forever, browsing on that native bloom, forgetful of their homeland. I drove them, all 3 wailing, to the ships, tied them down under their rowing benches, and called the rest. All hands aboard, come, clear the beach, and no one taste the lotus, or you lose your hope of home. Filing into their places by the rowlocks, my oarsmen dipped their long oars in the surf, and we moved out again on our seafaring. The Cyclops. In the next land we found were Cyclopes, giants, louts, without a law to bless them, in ignorance, leaving the fruitage of the earth in mystery to the immortal gods. They neither plow nor sow by hand, nor till the ground, though grain, wild wheat and barley, grows untended, and wine grapes in clusters ripen in heaven's rain. Cyclopes have no muster and no meeting, no consultation or old tribal ways, but each one dwells in his own mountain cave, dealing out rough justice to wife and child, indifferent to what the others do. Across the bay from the land of the Cyclopes is a lush, deserted island, Odysseus and his crew land on the island in a dense fog and spend several days feasting on wine and wild goats and observing the mainland where the Cyclopes live. On the third day, Odysseus and his company of men set out to learn if the Cyclopes are friends or foes. When the young dawn with fingertips of rose came in the east, I called my men together and made a speech to them. Old shipmates, friends, the rest of you stand by. I'll make the crossing in my own ship with my own company and find out what the mainland natives are, for they may be wild savages and lawless, or hospitable and God-fearing men. At this I went aboard and gave the word to cast off by the stern. My oarsmen followed, filing into their benches by the rowlocks, and all in line dipped oars in the gray sea. As we rowed on and nearer to the mainland, at one end of the bay we saw a cavern yawning above the water, screened with laurel, and many rams and goats about the place inside a sheepfold, made from slabs of stone, earth-fast between tall trunks of pine and rugged towering oak trees. A prodigious man slept in this cave alone, and took his flocks to graze a field, remote from all companions, knowing none but savage ways. A brute so huge, he seemed no man at all of those who eat good wheaten bread. But he seemed rather a shaggy mountain reared in solitude. We beached there, and I told the crew to stand by and keep watch over the ship. As for myself, I took my 12 best fighters and went ahead. I had a goatskin full of that sweet liquor that Euryanthe's son, Maron, had given me. He kept Apollo's holy grove at his Maris. For kindness we showed him there and showed his wife and child, he gave me 7 shining golden talents, perfectly formed, a solid silver wine bowl, and then this liquor, 12 two-handled jars of brandy, pure and fiery. Not a slave in Maron's household knew this drink. Only he, his wife, and the storeroom mistress knew. And they would put 1 cupful, ruby-colored, honey-smooth, in 20 more of water. But still the sweet scent hovered like a fume over the wine bowl. No man turned away when cups of this came round. A wineskin full I brought along, and victuals in a bag. For in my bones I knew some towering brute would be upon us soon, all outward power, a wild man, ignorant of civility. We climbed then briskly to the cave. But Cyclops had gone afield to pasture his fat sheep, so we looked round at everything inside. A drying rack that sagged with cheeses, pens crowded with lambs and kids, each in its class. Firstlings apart from middlings, and the dewdrops, or newborn lambkins, penned apart from both. And vessels full of whey were brimming there, bowls of earthenware and pails for milking. My men came pressing round me, pleading, "Why not take these cheeses, get them stowed, come back, throw open all the pens, and make a run for it? We'll drive the kids and lambs aboard. We say, put out again on good salt water." Ah, how sound that was! Yet I refused. I wished to see the caveman, what he had to offer. No pretty sight it turned out for my friends. We lit a fire, burnt an offering, and took some cheese to eat, then sat in silence around the embers, waiting. When he came, he had a load of dry boughs on his shoulder to stoke his fire at supper time. He dumped it with a great crash into that hollow cave, and we all scattered fast to the far wall. Then over the broad cavern floor, he ushered the ewes he meant to milk. He left his rams and he-goats in the yard outside, and swung high overhead a slab of solid rock to close the cave. 2 dozen 4-wheeled wagons with heaving wagon teams could not have stirred the tonnage of that rock from where he wedged it over the doorsill. Next he took his seat and milked his bleeding ewes. A practice job he made of it, giving each ewe her suckling. Thickened his milk, then into curds and whey, sieved out the curds to drip in withy baskets, and poured the whey to stand in bowls, cooling until he drank it for his supper. When all these chores were done, he poked the fire, heaping on brushwood. In the glare, he saw us.
"Strangers," he said, "who are you and where from? What brings you here by seaways? A fair traffic? Or are you wandering rogues who cast your lives like dice and ravage other folk by sea?"
We felt a pressure on our hearts, in dread of that deep rumble and that mighty man. But all the same, I spoke up in reply. "We are from Troy, Achaeans blown off course by shifting gales on the great South Sea, homeward bound, but taking routes and ways uncommon. So the will of Zeus would have it. We served under Agamemnon, son of Atreus. The whole world knows what city he laid waste, what armies he destroyed. It was our luck to come here. Here we stand, beholden for your help, or any gifts you give, as custom is to honor strangers. We would entreat you, great sir, have a care for the gods' courtesy. Zeus will avenge the unoffending guest." He answered this from his brute chest, unmoved.
"You are a ninny, or else you come from the other end of nowhere, telling me mind the gods. We Cyclopes care not a whistle for your thundering Zeus, or all the gods in bliss. We have more force by far. I would not let you go for fear of Zeus, you or your friends, unless I had a whim to. Tell me, where was it now you left your ship, around the point or down the shore, I wonder?"
He thought he'd find out, but I saw through this and answered with a ready lie. "My ship? Poseidon, Lord, who sets the earth a-tremble, broke it up on the rocks at your land's end. A wind from seaward served him, drove us there. We are survivors, these good men and I." Neither reply nor pity came from him. But in one stride he clutched at my companions and caught two in his hands like squirming puppies to beat their brains out, spattering the floor. Then he dismembered them and made his meal, gaping and crunching like a mountain lion, everything, innards, flesh and marrow bones. We cried aloud, lifting our hands to Zeus, powerless, looking on at this appalled. But Cyclops went on, filling up his belly with man-flesh and great gulps of whey, then lay down like a mast among his sheep. My heart beat high now at the chance of action, and drawing the sharp sword from my hip, I went along his flank to stab him where the midriff holds the liver. I had touched the spot when sudden fear stayed me. If I killed him, we perished there as well, for we could never move his ponderous doorway slab aside. So we were left to groan and wait for morning. When the young dawn, with fingertips of rose, lit up the world, the Cyclops built a fire and milked his handsome ewes, all in due order, putting the sucklings to the mothers. Then, his chores being all dispatched, he caught another brace of men to make his breakfast and whisked away his great door slab to let his sheep go through, but he, behind, reset the stone as one would cap a quiver. There was a din of whistling as the Cyclops rounded his flock to higher ground. Then stillness. And now I pondered how to hurt him worst, if but Athena granted what I prayed for. Here are the means I thought would serve my turn. A club or staff lay there along the fold, an olive tree, felled green and left to season for Cyclops' hand. And it was like a mast, a lugger of 20 oars, broad in the beam, a deep-sea-going craft, might carry so long, so big around, it seemed. Now I chopped out a 6-foot section of this pole and set it down before my men, who scraped it. And when they had it smooth, I hewed again to make a stake with pointed end. I held this in the fire's heart and turned it, toughening it, then hit it, well back in the cavern, under one of the dung piles in profusion there. Now came the time to toss for it. Who ventured along with me? Whose hand could bear to thrust and grind that spike in Cyclops' eye when mild sleep had mastered him? As luck would have it, the men I would have chosen won the toss. 4 strong men, and I made 5 as captain. At evening came the shepherd with his flock, his woolly flock. The rams as well this time entered the cave. By some sheep-herding whim or a god's bidding, none were left outside. He hefted his great boulder into place and sat him down to milk the bleeding ewes in proper order, put the lambs to suck, and swiftly ran through all his evening chores. Then he caught 2 more men and feasted on them. My moment was at hand, and I went forward, holding an ivy bowl of my dark drink, looking up, saying, "Cyclops, try some wine. Here's liquor to wash down your scraps of men. Taste it, and see the kind of drink we carried under our planks. I meant it for an offering if you would help us home, but you are mad, unbearable, a bloody monster. After this, will any other traveler come to see you?" He seized and drained the bowl, and it went down so fiery and smooth, he called for more. "Give me another, thank you kindly. Tell me, how are you called? I'll make a gift will please you. Even Cyclopes know the wine grapes grow out of grassland and loam in heaven's rain, but here's a bit of nectar and ambrosia." 3 bowls I brought him, and he poured them down. I saw the fuddle and flush come over him. Then I sang out in cordial tones, "Cyclops, you ask my honorable name? Remember the gift you promised me, and I shall tell you. My name is Nobody. Mother, father, and friends, everyone calls me Nobody." And he said, "Nobody's my meat, then. After I eat his friends, others come first. There's a noble gift now." Even as he spoke, he reeled and tumbled backward, his great head lolling to one side, and sleep took him like any creature. Drunk, hiccuping, he dribbled streams of liquor and bits of men. Now, by the gods, I drove my big hand spike deep in the embers, charring it again, and cheered my men along with battle talk to keep their courage up. No quitting now. The pike of olive, green though it had been, reddened and glowed as if about to catch. I drew it from the coals, and my 4 fellows gave me a hand, lugging it near the Cyclops as more than natural force nerved them. Straight forward they sprinted, lifted it, and rammed it deep in his crater eye, and I leaned on it, turning it as a shipwright turns a drill in planking, having men below to swing the 2-handled strap that spins it in the groove. So with our brand we bored that great eye-socket, while blood ran out around the red-hot bar. Eyelid and lash were seared, the pierced ball hissed broiling, and the roots popped. In a smithy, one sees a white-hot axe-head or an adze plunged and wrung in a cold tub, screeching steam, the way they make soft iron hale and hard. Just so, that eyeball hissed around the spike. The Cyclops bellowed, and the rock roared round him, and we fell back in fear. Clawing his face, he tugged the bloody spike out of his eye, threw it away, and his wild hands went groping. Then he set up a howl for Cyclopes, who lived in caves on windy peaks nearby. Some heard him, and they came by divers ways to clump around outside and call, "What ails you, Polyphemus? Why do you cry so sore in the starry night? You will not let us sleep. Sure, no man's driving off your flock. No man has tricked you, ruined you." Out of the cave, the mammoth Polyphemus roared in answer, "Nobody! Nobody's tricked me! Nobody's ruined me!" To this rough shout they made a sage reply. "Ah, well, if nobody has played you foul there in your lonely bed, we are no use in pain given by great Zeus. Let it be your father, Poseidon Lord, to whom you pray." So saying, they trailed away, and I was filled with laughter to see how like a charm the name deceived them. Now Cyclops, wheezing as the pain came on him, fumbled to wrench away the great doorstone and squatted in the breach with arms thrown wide for any silly beast or man who bolted, hoping somehow I might be such a fool. But I kept thinking how to win the game. Death sat there huge. How could we slip away? I drew on all my wits and ran through tactics, reasoning as a man will for dear life, until a trick came, and it pleased me well. The Cyclops' rams were handsome, fat, with heavy fleeces, a dark violet. Three abreast I tied them silently together, twining cords of willow from the ogre's bed, then slung a man under each middle one to ride there safely, shielded left and right. So three sheep could convey each man. I took the woolliest ram, the choicest of the flock, and hung myself under his kinky belly, pulled up tight, with fingers twisted deep in sheepskin ringlets for an iron grip. So, breathing hard, we waited until morning. When dawn spread out her fingertips of rose, the rams began to stir, moving for pasture, and peals of bleeding echoed round the pens, where dams with udders full called for a milking. Blinded and sick with pain from his head wound, the master stroked each ram, then let it pass. But my men, riding on the pectoral fleece, the giant's blind hands blundering never found. Last of them all, my ram, the leader, came, weighted by wool, and me with my meditations. The Cyclops patted him, and then he said,
"Sweet cousin Ram, why lag behind the rest in the night cave? You never linger so, but graze before them all and go afar to crop sweet grass, and take your stately way, leading along the streams, until at evening you run to be the first one in the fold. Why now so far behind? Can you be grieving over your master's eye? That carrion rogue and his accursed companions burnt it out when he had conquered all my wits with wine. Nobody will not get out alive, I swear. Oh, had you brain and voice to tell where he may be now, dodging all my fury. Bashed by this hand and bashed on this rock wall, his brains would strew the floor, and I should have rest from the outrage nobody worked upon me."
He sent us into the open then. Close by, I dropped and rolled clear of the ram's belly, going this way and that to untie the men. With many glances back, we rounded up his fat, stiff-legged sheep to take aboard, and drove them down to where the good ship lay. We saw, as we came near, our fellows' faces, shining. Then we saw them turn to grief, tallying those who had not fled from death. I hushed them, jerking head and eyebrows up, and in a low voice told them, "Load this herd, move fast, and put the ship's head toward the breakers." They all pitched in at loading, then embarked and struck their oars into the sea. Far out, as far offshore as shouted words would carry, I sent a few back to the adversary.
"O Cyclops, would you feast on my companions? Puny am I in a caveman's hands? How do you like the beating that we gave you, you damned cannibal? Eater of guests under your roof? Zeus and the gods have paid you."
The blind thing, in his doubled fury, broke a hilltop in his hands and heaved it after us. Ahead of our black prow it struck and sank, whelmed in a spuming geyser, a giant wave that washed the ship's stern foremost back to shore. I got the longest boat hook out and stood fending us off, with furious nods to all to put their backs into a racing stroke, row, row, or perish. So the long oars bent, kicking the foam sternward, making head until we drew away and twice as far. Now when I cupped my hands, I heard the crew in low voices protesting, "God's sake, Captain, why bait the beast again? Let him alone. That tidal wave he made on the first throw all but beached us, all but stove us in. Give him our bearing with your trumpeting, he'll get the range and lob a boulder. Aye, he'll smash our timbers and our heads together." I would not heed them in my glorying spirit, but let my anger flare, and yelled, "Cyclops, if ever mortal man inquire how you were put to shame and blinded, tell him Odysseus, raider of cities, took your eye, Laertes' son, whose home's on Ithaca." At this he gave a mighty sob and rumbled, "Now comes the weird upon me, spoken of old. A wizard, grand and wondrous, lived here, Telemus, a son of Eurymus. Great length of days he had in wizardry among the Cyclopes, and these things he foretold for time to come. My great eye lost, and at Odysseus' hands. Always I had in mind some giant, armed and giant force would come against me here. But you, small, pitiful, and twiggy, you put me down with wine. You blinded me. Come back, Odysseus, and I'll treat you well, praying the god of earthquake to befriend you. His son I am, for he by his avowal fathered me, and if he will, he may heal me of this black wound, he and no other, of all the happy gods or mortal men." "Few words," I shouted in reply to him. "If I could take your life, I would, and take your time away, and hurl you down to hell. The god of earthquake could not heal you there." At this he stretched his hands out in his darkness toward the sky of stars and prayed Poseidon. "Oh, hear me, Lord, blue girdler of the islands. If I am thine indeed, and thou art father, grant that Odysseus, raider of cities, never see his home. Laertes' son, I mean, who kept his hall on Ithaca. Should destiny intend that he shall see his roof again among his family and his fatherland, far be that day, and dark the years between. Let him lose all companions, and return under strange sail to bitter days at home." In these words he prayed, and the god heard him. Now he laid hands upon a bigger stone and wheeled around, titanic for the cast, to let it fly in the black proud vessel's track. But it fell short, just aft the steering oar, and whelming seas rose giant above the stone to bear us onward toward the island. There, as we ran in, we saw the squadron waiting, the trim ships drawn up side by side, and all our troubled friends who waited, looking seaward. We beached her, grinding keel in the soft sand, and waded in ourselves on the sandy beach. Then we unloaded all the Cyclops' flock, to make division, share and share alike. Only my fighters voted that my ram, the prize of all, should go to me. I slew him by the seaside and burnt his long thigh bones to Zeus beyond the storm cloud, Cronus' son, who rules the world. But Zeus disdained my offering. Destruction for my ships he had in store, and death for those who sailed them, my companions. Now all day long, until the sun went down, we made our feast on mutton and sweet wine, till after sunset in the gathering dark, we went to sleep above the wash of ripples. When the young dawn with fingertips of rose touched the world, I roused the men, gave orders to man the ships, cast off the mooring lines, and filing in to sit beside the rowlocks, oarsmen in line dipped oars in the gray sea. So we moved out, sad in the vast offing, having our precious lives, but not our friends.